Make sure to check out dfsclub.com, where you can get four providers for the price of one. Daily advice and lineup construction help from industry pros. Make sure to check out our all-new sports betting section, where you can get every play for every sport for as little as $5.
We are joined now by Jonathan Von Tobel, professional sports bettor and handicapper. He's the host of The Edge on VSiN. You can catch that show 10 to midnight Pacific on VSiN Live on Sirius XM 204 and Fubo TV. You've also heard him on ESPN's Cofield and Company in ESPN Las Vegas. Go ahead and give him a follow on Twitter at MeJVT. Jonathan, appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, guys. This is a lot of fun. This is my first video interview I've ever done. I did stadium things, but and I don't know what to do with my hands, like Ricky Bobby says all the time.
They usually try and keep me off of a video because I usually end up breaking the cameras. I'm so ugly. But hey, let's try and get through this thing. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start off with your background a little bit. Where'd you start off? I mean, did you get going in sports betting or get going as a journalist first? What came first?
So it kind of came hand in hand. You know, I grew up out here in Las Vegas. I was born in Santa Ana, but my family's been here since we've been about two. I was about 2 years old when we moved out here. So, you know, I grew up out in Las Vegas. When I started going to school for journalism, to get through school, I worked at Starbucks in the Red Rock Casino out here. And, you know, I was always a sports fan. So, you know, you start betting and you're in the Starbucks that I worked at was right outside of the sports book. So, you know, you talk to bettors all the time because they come for the regular coffees, a lot of the horse racers. You get more and more involved as the days go on. So as I progressed through my degree in journalism, you know, I also started to bet more with the money I made at Starbucks. So it kind of just went hand in hand. And then when I got into the media journalism realm, it was just with regular sports talk radio. Obviously, being based in Las Vegas, there's a certain sports betting content to it, but nowhere near what we're doing at VSiN. And they needed a producer, and then that's when I got started at VSiN. So kind of went hand in hand for the most part in terms of like sports betting and media and everything like that.
Hey, Jonathan, Jacob here. So, you know, as sports betting is continuously getting legalized across the board, for the guys that are just starting out, what tips or advice would you get for those just starting out or for those looking to get into it professionally, you know, being able to quit their day job?
Well, obviously, bankroll management is very important. Research is very important. You know, essentially, I think when it comes to sports betting, it's just like anything else. It's how much do you want to put into it? Because I'm a firm believer that you know, it sounds a little corny, but you can achieve a lot as long as you put your mind to it. So it depends on what you want to do. But bankroll management is extremely important. You have to be dedicated to it. And you also got to be able to take lumps, man. Like it's anything in life. You know, there's times where you'll get like stone cold and you'll think that there's, you know, you never dig out of it. I actually just went through a stretch of that. Like, I love the NBA. I'm one of our main NBA guys at VSiN, and I've had a great year, but I'm going through the coldest part of the year going into the All-Star break. So it happens. You're not going to hit 70-80%. And that's the most important part about it is, you know, you'll have your highs, you'll have your lows, but I think dedication and sticking through things like that are very important.
We're talking to Jonathan Von Tobel. Give him a follow on Twitter at MeJVT. So let's get into some NBA. Obviously, we're heading into All-Star break, but before we get to the actual weekend, which teams do you think needed the break headed into the weekend?
Well, I think for sure, Philadelphia has kind of been the talk of the town for the most part in terms of how cold they've gone. And, you know, you get a big win against the Clippers before you head into the break, so that's massive. So I think at the top of the list for sure, a team like Philadelphia, who's working out some kinks, so is really banged up. Joel Embiid gets some time. I mean, he's going to be in the All-Star game, but he gets a little bit of time to rest the hand. So I think Philadelphia has got to be definitely at the top of the list. And I think a surprising team is going to be like a Milwaukee Bucks. And it's not because they're bad, but they had clearly, kind of like the Lakers, they put so much emphasis into the regular season. They're trying to win as many games as possible and get that top overall seed. They're on pace to win 70 games. You know, break is good for a team like that where they're constantly exerting themselves night in and night out. So I think those are really – the top two teams that come to mind in terms of needing an all-star break. You know, a team like the Celtics are a little banged up as well. Jaylen Brown's got a calf issue that he's dealing with. So things of that nature when teams have little issues, I think that's going to be along the lines too. And the last candidate I think would be the Lakers. I mean, it's funny. We were talking about this the other day on the show. The Lakers in their last 12 games before beating up on the Nuggets, and then that went to overtime, but their defensive rating had been over 111, despite the fact that they're actually the second-best defensive team in the NBA, because you're just trying to win these games, and you're trying to get the top overall seed, and a lot of that on defense is effort. And so I think teams like the Lakers, too, when you're exerting effort, when you're trying to maintain that top seed, when there's teams behind you in your conference, they need a break as well. And you saw in the defensive numbers, and I think that'd be a really good candidate, too.
Good stuff, man. With the NBA All-Star game coming up this weekend, obviously, it's always something that's brought up, you know, in sports betting circles. Some say, never bet the All-Star game. And then some say, hey, that's where some value is. You look at where the market's lowering their, you know, their limits, and they're telling you where they're scared, where they want to take bets, where they don't. So where do you fall? Do you like to bet on All-Star games? Do you like to stay away from them? In general, what do you think about that?
I don't bet them every year, but I'll bet them for fun. You know, I think it was the was it 2 years ago, or yeah, two All-Star games ago, there was DeMar DeRozan had like a final possession on LeBron James and went down the wire, and I had 2 points and ended up losing because DeMar DeRozan didn't do anything against LeBron in the final possession. But, you know, like they're fun. So I think sometimes we lose sight of, like in sports betting, if you really follow sports betting and sports betting Twitter, you know, it gets pretty hardcore. But at the same time, it's an entertainment deal. So if you want to bet an All-Star game, I think it's fun to do, you know, fun to bet on totals, things of that nature, MVPs. For All-Star games as well, especially for the NBA. So, you know, I'm down with it. I don't do it every year, but I'm down. I get a little bit more involved with the stuff around the NBA All-Star game, specifically the three-point shooting contest, because that's a specific contest. These guys are legitimately trying, and they're not going to exert yourself, so you know you're going to get full effort. So I'm more comfortable actually doing some research and betting on those. But, yeah, there's if you want to bet on the All-Star game, I think you should. I mean, it's betting. It's fun. It's entertainment.
Exactly. Okay, so I love that you gave that answer. Now, before we get into kind of some of the different things, you said the three-point contest is your go-to, your bread and butter here?
Yeah, I like to have a little fun with the three-point contest. And actually, I had two candidates for the three-point contest this year. I'm going to pull up the numbers on it because they're actually pretty good. It's Duncan Robinson and Devontae Graham were the two I was looking at. Devontae Graham's pretty meaty at like 10-1, and Duncan Robinson is sitting at about 11-2. But I went through the numbers and kind of broke them down by shooting percentages by areas of the floor. So you have like Trae Young, for example, who's your favorite on corner threes this year, right? Because you're going to have like all the brackets, right? You have the corners, the wings, and the top of the key. And I think they extended the corners out, or the wings, excuse me. So you break this down by guys when they shoot overall corner three-point percentage and non-corner three-point percentage, which is all in front of the key. And a guy like Trae Young, who's 7-2, for example, he shoots 70% on corner threes, which you would think is amazing. But you dig into it and you realize he's only taking 17 corner threes. So that's not something sustainable. And only shoots 34% on non-corner threes. So that's not a guy I want a piece of. Duncan Robinson was interesting to me because across the board, when it was three-point percentage overall, corner three-point percentage, and non-corner three-point percentage, he was only one of two guys in the field that hit over 40% in all three categories. And what makes him different than Davis Bertans, who was the other guy, is that he's actually taken over 100 corner three-point attempts, one of the most in the field at this point. So I like Duncan Robinson and Devontae Graham. He's not 40% across the board, but he's 40% in the corners with over 50 attempts from the corners, and he's a pretty good non-corner shooter too. And I like to get a little bit of value. So 10-1 on him, and then 11-2 on Duncan Robinson was where I went for this one.
In general, when you look at these kind of bets where there's a lot of different outcomes, right, where you're betting on, you know, how many touchdowns will a quarterback throw, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or these, right, where you're betting on 6, 7, 8 guys for the skills, the three-point, obviously there's a huge household for this, right? So do you think in general you go with more of the guys near the top, the plus 200s, plus 300s, or in general, is it better to kind of take a shot at a 10-1, 11-1?
I think it also depends on the field, right? Like golf's a really good example. I think in a golf tournament where you have all of these options and the hold is massive for these books, like the Canadian kid who won last week, William Hill and the Westgate didn't have a single ticket on him. And so this guy wins the tournament and they hold everything else that comes in. So if it's a really deep field like that, I think you definitely want to look a little bit and find some value. I don't really like betting on favorites just because you're not getting that much, and you're already not getting enough value as it is in future markets like this. So I generally skew towards middle of the pack, but I also like to do enough research where I feel comfortable. You know, and I like to go to golf because it's a really good example. But like for like John Rahm, right? I would love to bet on John Rahm in almost every golf tournament from here on out, but the market's caught up with him, and you're betting on John Rahm at like 9 or 10-1 in a field with over 100 guys, and there's just no value there. So I think it differs on what you're betting into and the research that you do. But for the most part, I think it just comes down to that. Just finding your angle and handicapping and then hammering it from that angle.
Talking to Jonathan Von Tobel. Give him a follow on Twitter at MeJVT. That's M-E-J-V-T. All right, do you have any thoughts on the overall All-Star game? Team LeBron, Team Giannis. Team LeBron currently -5. A lot of people saying LeBron could be a future GM compared to the team he chose. Giannis, it looks like this guy's never played NBA 2K and drafted a team before. It's not good so far. So who are you leaning? LeBron -5, Giannis +5.
Giannis had some weird, loyalty to the Eastern Conference, it seems like. Like, his team's essentially, it's East versus West. I mean, obviously LeBron's team should be favored. I was joking around on the show last night, actually, because my co-host, Matt Eumanns, was telling me about, essentially just what we talked about. Like, LeBron's team is going to be dominant, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't know, man. You got a lot of dominant ball handlers. You know, I don't know how a James Harden fits on the floor with a LeBron James or an Anthony Davis. But in general, I would say yes, LeBron. But the thing that kind of throws me off here is just the new format, right? And that's why I didn't get involved this year. When the scores are resetting after the first quarter and the second quarter, then you have the target score in the final quarter. After the third quarter score, they're going to add on the 24 points. So I stayed away because of that. And, sometimes I really don't like to do this when it comes to events like this or just moments in time. But, there was just a weird aura around what this All-Star game is going to be. Is there going to be effort from a lot of these players because of the tributes to Kobe Bryant and things of that nature? So, to me, there were so many factors. I stayed away from the game itself, but obviously I agree with the line, a heavy lean towards LeBron, but now it's up to 5. I mean, who knows how high it's going to get, because then you might sit back and go, okay, maybe there's something going here with Team Giannis if the number gets high enough.
All right, last question for the All-Star game, okay? Now, this is the fan favorite, the event everybody loves. The celebrity game. This is going to be Friday night. Team Wilbon, Team Stephen A. Now, I always go Team Wilbon just because I can't really stand Stephen A. Smith. That's just me. So let's just give you a quick recap. If you don't know, Team Wilbon. Wilbon's the captain. Or excuse me, the captain is Common, the rapper. They got Bad Bunny. They got Kane Brown. The NBA legend, Quentin Richardson. And then Team Stephen A. The captain is Chance the Rapper. They've got Quavo. They've got Taylor Bennett. The NBA legend, Darius Miles. You're going to go Team Stephen A., Team Wilbon. What are you thinking here?
Which, whatever Team Quavo's on, I'm in. I don't know, because actually I really enjoy All-Star Weekend, and he's been on a couple of Celebrity All-Star
Quavo's games. Team Stephen A., so you're going Stephen A. There you go.
Stephen A. Quavo's actually a secret baller, man. He actually has some really nice handles. He can shoot. There was one 2 years ago that he actually dominated the Celebrity All-Star game. He's actually got some secret game to him. So whatever Team Quavo's on, I'm totally in.
There you go.
We're talking to Jonathan Von Tobel. Give him a follow on Twitter at MeJVT. I will say this before we go on. Chance the Rapper is my lock for MVP going into this. He really is. My fiance is the biggest Chance the Rapper fan. And he grew up streetballing in Atlanta and wherever Chicago, the city he's from, whichever it is. But I really do like Chance the Rapper as MVP for the Celebrity All-Star game.
It's always weird to see who's good at basketball. Adam Sandler's good at basketball. Yeah. You get some random comedians every now and then. It's weird.
And Adam Sandler's got that weird kind of almost a Tim Duncan-esque jump shot where he can bank it in. It's so odd.
Throws it from behind his head.
Yeah.
He shoots like I do. like a Jewish guy like me, so you gave us a few teams that needed a break. What are a few teams that you think are primed to make a run after the All-Star break?
I think the Clippers, I think, would be a pretty good example. A team that just actually that Boston game was, by the way, was fantastic. I hope some of you guys actually got to watch it. It was one of the best NBA games of the season up to this point. But this Clippers team, who has really been unhealthy throughout this entire first part of the season, they have yet to play six consecutive games together, something ridiculous. And then Paul George, of course, pulls the hamstring in that game against the Boston Celtics. But look out for a team, I would say, like the Clippers. The Clippers, if they're finally going to be healthy, they finally start to play together, they finally start to get, a little bit more in terms of the intensity, making that playoff push. I think Los Angeles can be pretty prime for that. And watch out for the health, of course. But that Boston game was the first time they had lost two consecutive games all season long. So this is a team that had been barely trying, that hadn't really given anything on the road whatsoever. So they're really primed, especially in that range from 1-3 in the Western Conference. And I think, too, because this team started to get healthy and they actually made a little run going into the break. But the Denver Nuggets, too, man. The Western Conference is loaded. But the Denver Nuggets are extremely deep. A guy like Michael Porter Jr., who's actually been sidelined because of some injuries that he's been dealing with, has been a phenomenal surprise for them. And they've been waiting for that because that's what they thought he was going to be. But from top to bottom, right, Paul Millsap had missed a lot of time. Jamal Murray had missed a lot of time. Will Barton had been in and out of the lineup. So this is a team that once they're starting to get healthy, and they are, could definitely make a run, especially with their inherent home court advantage, which is much more prevalent in the regular season. I think Denver's going to be pretty dangerous down the stretch too.
Great. So anyone else in the West that you might think of as a sleeper going into the second half of the season?
No, I think it's Denver's like the sleeper for me. So I bet them about a week and a half ago to win the Western Conference, about 12-1. I think I got a bad number. I think you get 15-1 if you look around for it. But I think Denver, to me, and it was more of a, there is a clear road for them to get to the Western Conference Finals, and then I can hedge off of that if I want to. But I think at that point, like really, that's the line of demarcation in the Western Conference. I have a futures ticket on the Jazz that I bet in the summer to win the finals at 30-1, but I don't feel confident about that. Defensively, they've really fallen off. They're a little small with the new Vamp lineup, and I thought that would actually help them out a little bit, but it really hasn't. And then after that, Houston. Like, Houston's a really big unknown. And maybe, going back to your last question, maybe that's a team that catches some fire here with the small ball look. But I've downgraded Houston quite a bit in the regular season. I haven't been high on them, and I'm just not sure how the small ball lineup really works out for them. I mean, think about it. Before their game against Boston, right, they had played three games in that small ball lineup. They had been out-rebounded by 29. They had given up 53 points per paint or points per game in the paint. They were just getting destroyed in those three games against the Lakers, Phoenix, and the Jazz. So I'm not really high on Houston. I think Denver's a line of demarcation. It's those top three teams, and then everybody else is kind of competing to finish up behind them.
Do you think
sure?
Go ahead, Jacob.
Sorry, on that, yeah. There are just so many good bigs in the West right now. I mean, yeah. I'm a big fantasy player, so I'm pretty keened in on, you know, matchups. And I'm a guy that usually takes bigs against the Rockets now. I mean, it's just how it is. I didn't like the Capella trade. I didn't. But I'm definitely right there with you with Denver and against Houston. So,
Jonathan, you throw those three teams out, L.A. Clippers, L.A. Lakers, and the Denver Nuggets. Do you think there's value on Denver? The last lines I saw, this is off the top of my head, I believe it was somewhere around the L.A. Lakers were plus 150, plus 175. L.A. Clippers around plus 200, plus 225. And then it takes a jump. Denver's about plus 550, plus 600. Would you say there's maybe a little bit of value taking the Nuggets at that three spot, if it is, kind of in your opinion, down to those three teams in the West?
Are you talking about the odds to win the Western Conference?
Yes, just to win the West.
No, I would actually shop around, because 2 weeks ago they were 12-1, and actually then not even 2 weeks ago they were 12-1, and that was at the Westgate. Excuse me, that was at William Hill. Westgate, I think, had 15-1 to win the Western Conference.
Really?
So,
and again, yeah, this is off the top of my head. This may not be exactly accurate right now, but yeah.
No, but to your point, like yeah. If I think there are double digits available for Denver, and you're talking about a team that could win the more than likely could win the second seed in the Western Conference, being at about 15-1. And to me, you know, I had this conversation the other night with somebody, and they're like, "Yeah, wow, you really think Denver's going to beat the Lakers or the Clippers?" And it's not so much that I think that they can beat the Lakers and the Clippers, but like we talked about, if I have 15-1 on Denver going into the Western Conference Finals to win the Western Conference, then that's an opportunity to hedge off of that, and you can find yourself in a pretty good position. So that's how I have that set up. I have a ticket that I'm really excited about, the Miami Heat at 80-1 to win the NBA Finals. Do I think they can win the NBA Finals? No, but is there a road to the Eastern Conference Finals and potentially an NBA Finals berth? Yeah, like it's obviously there. And so when you're betting some of these futures, when you're betting them at value, it's not so much you want to hold on to them and so you can think, yeah, I'm going to cash this and they're going to win, but it's setting yourself up. So yeah, long story short, I do think there's value in Denver because I think they're still in the range of 15-1 to win the Western Conference.
All right, man, we'll get you out of here on this one. Obviously, Zion coming back this year, playing this year finally, has been a big story. What about Rookie of the Year? I mean, right now in the market, it looks like Ja Morant's a very big favorite. Zion is you know, that underdog, and you may have to, again, correct these numbers because this is off the top of my head. About the last I saw was minus 400 Ja Morant, plus 500 Zion, and then it goes down to plus 900, plus 1100 for some of these other rookies. Does Zion have time to make a legitimate run, or is it over? Does Ja Morant pretty much have it in the bag because of where we are in the season?
Yeah, it depends on where you shop. I've seen that number. I've seen Ja as high as minus 800, you know, to win the award. And again, I think that one's courtesy of the Westgate. But look, it's funny. So Humans, my co-host, again, he's got a ticket on Ja Morant, and he bet it before the season started at 3-1 to win Rookie of the Year. And he's kind of doing this whole reverse mush thing, telling me that, I don't know, you know, Zion's making this push. To me, in my mind, there is no question who the Rookie of the Year is. Despite what Zion has been doing in these last few games, right? It is Ja Morant. And the biggest thing, go back to a few years ago, Malcolm Brogdon won Rookie of the Year over Joel Embiid. And why? Because he had played more games. That's the biggest issue here is Zion. Like, he was not available. He barely came, he barely made his debut, as you mentioned, what is it now, two, 3 weeks ago against the San Antonio Spurs? Ja Morant's a rookie of the year because he's been playing at a high level and he's been available throughout this entire season. So I wouldn't find much value in Zion. And like even if you go back to last year, right, the narrative had started to pick up for Trae Young in the second half of the season over Luka Doncic because he'd been playing so well. But the voters, only two people voted Trae Young first place for rookie of the year. So the narrative had started to go in Trae Young's favor, but the voters know exactly what had happened. All year long, Luka Doncic was the best player, and he almost swept the award. So I would say, I personally wouldn't touch Zion Williamson because I don't think he's going to win, and I don't think he's got enough time because he hasn't been available to surpass what Ja Morant has been doing.
Good stuff. He is Jonathan Von Tobel. Give him a follow on Twitter at MeJVT and listen to The Edge on VSiN. You can catch up on that 10 to midnight Pacific on at VSiN Live, Sirius XM 204, Fubo TV, Sling TV, NESN, MSG Networks, and so many other outlets. So be sure to check for them online. Again, he's Jonathan Von Tobel. Jonathan, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.